Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm TM.
And tonight we cap out our 3-week project of movies about skiers getting murdered.
Yeah.
Unless we find two more to watch next week, that could happen.
Well, we'd be getting into sequel territory.
That's true. And apparently, Cold Prey 2 is not about skiers getting murdered. It's about the aftermath of the movie Cold Prey. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's actually less interesting than I thought it would be. I was kind of hoping that each subsequent movie would just be like more skiers getting murdered, but no. No, it's just like, what if we pick up this story literally exactly where it left off and keep telling it like we're making Ing Hatchet or something?
Well, I guess, you know, there are a finite amount of skiers and snowboarders in the world, and yeah. You will reach a point at which you've killed them all, so.
You say that, but it's Norway, and I'm pretty sure everyone in that whole country skis. So, again, maybe I'm not that educated about Norway. So, first off, we've got some random crap to discuss. Check this out, a couple of video game recommendations. Coming out either today or maybe Friday, on the PS4, people can get Intruders Hide and Seek, which is one of those, you know, the first person horror games where you run away from monsters?
Yep.
That genre, Outlast and whatnot. Well, it's one of those, but the twist is you play as a kid who's, you know, up at their, the family's palatial, like, wooded estate when creepy murderers show up and you have to dodge through the house and try and rescue your family. Over the course of one bad night. So it's genuinely creepy. And what I really liked about it was because you're playing as a child, right? You're role playing as a child, like a 12-year-old or something. You're very short. And so by playing it in VR, it's simulating the experience of being a small person in a normal sized world. So all of the doors look really huge and you could hide under small things. So it's like, not the usual perspective I've seen in this type of game. So it was a nice twist. I thought it had a decent story. It was all very well produced, and there's some genuinely creepy moments. So Intruders Hide and Seek is something to check out.
Cool.
And then there's another game that has already gotten the AVOD seal of approval that is finally coming out on Valentine's Day, and that is Textorcist, the story of Ray Bibbia. Which, we all remember this one. You can check out us playing it on the,
yep.
On the Hidden Object Guru channel. It is a typing bullet hell game, and it is just, it's a delight. Like, I mean, it's really frustrating, but I've been playing the full version, and I'm not done it yet, but all of the bosses are very clever. The writing mechanic doesn't get old. The story stays funny the whole way through. So yeah, I mean, unless it has a terrible ending and I'm back here complaining about it next week, just 100% get yourself a copy of The Story of Ray Bibbia.
Speaking of terrible endings.
Oh.
I finished watching You.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You're going to take back that recommendation from last week?
Well, I don't know. It just, I think it didn't know what to do at the end because it sort of paints itself into a corner a little bit.
Right.
And there's a scene, I think it's in the second last episode, where he says something to her. He's like, oh, I gotta go to see the boss about something. And she's like, oh, okay. And then like takes off to go take care of some unfinished business. And then, you know, a little later on, he takes her to meet the boss. And it's like, there is no way that he could have spoken to this guy earlier about urgent business.
Really?
Yeah, so it's like, why isn't she suspicious?
Oh, okay. So the plot gets pretty contrived right at the end just to get to the ending point?
So that happens, and you're like, how come you're not now suspicious about this? He said he had to go see his boss, but you've met the boss now, and you know that there's, like, this guy's had a stroke.
Yeah, that definitely didn't happen.
He can't look over the books. Like, he yeah. lied to you. You know, so there's that, and then it just sort of like, it devolves, and again, everything, it sort of rushes to its ending, but it doesn't really know what it wants or how to get there.
Oh.
And then somebody shows up at the end of the show and you're like, what the fuck is going on?
Is it, Is it an awkward hook for another season, or is it just,
okay.
I wish shows just knew to end, you know?
Right. Just tell a story.
Have a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, not every show has to run forever, guys. And when a show's about a crazy murderous stalker, maybe don't try and get 5 seasons out of that.
It's going to get real old, real fast.
Well, I always talk about the show, Wise Guy, which, I mean, we've talked here about how it's my favorite show of all time. How, like, the two defining shows of my childhood were Twin Peaks and Wise Guy, and they both hold up better than anything else. But what I loved about Wise Guy was I was reading an interview with, Cannell and Frank Lupo, right? The guys who created it, and they were talking about how it specifically was created as a response to Crime Story, which was the Dennis Farina, Michael Mann cop show. And they said the problem was, you can't have a show about chasing the same bad guy every week. Like, to do interesting drama, you have to have something more than a bad guy of the week. But if you're chasing the same bad guy every week for 2 years, it looks like all of your characters suck at their job.
Well, or you're just a Saturday morning cartoon.
Which, to be fair, tends to be about people who suck at their job, but that's... Transformers weren't really good at their job. They always let Megatron get away.
So, yeah. I was thinking G.I. Joe, but...
G.I. Joe works too.
Right?
My first thought, cops.
At least Sailor Moon vanquished the enemy at the end of every season.
That's true. Yeah. And the thing about Wise Guy was they're like, no, we're just going to do focused stories about each one of these, like, each of these story arcs, and then it's going to be over and we're going to move on. And I think is this going to be one of these situations where they just, like, keep trying to milk it indefinitely, and you're going to get diminishing returns.
Yeah, well, who knows if there will be a second one.
Yeah, but... having that mindset of trying to get, keep people excited for a second one keeps you from satisfyingly ending the season when it logically should have. And that's something that I rarely forgive.
Well, here's the other thing though. Like, True Detective.
Yes.
Did this.
Beginning,
right?
Middle, like, and end.
Beginning, middle, and end. And then second season was just kind of shit. So nobody really is looking forward to season 3, which I think is actually supposed to be pretty good. I don't actually know.
A lot of people have seemed to be liking season 3.
Yeah, and American Horror Story has had success in just having a different story every season.
Exactly. You can still keep doing a show, just recast it and start over. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's fine. If you wanted to, maybe you could tell another story about a different stalker next year. Hey, you know what? Buy the rights to Swim Fan and remake Swim Fan as a season of television. I just like saying Swim Fan.
There is a show on TV called Obsession Dark Desire. I might have mentioned it before.
You've mentioned it a lot.
It's just a whole show about stalkers.
Yep.
Any one of those women's stories.
Could be a whole season of television.
Could be a whole season of television.
Yeah. There you go. You know, it's like, it's not complicated, guys. There's always going to be new creepy stories of stalkers. And you know what? Yeah, maybe people were coming for the actors for the first season. They don't necessarily have to be there the same actors every season. Or American Horror Story it. If you like an actor so much, cast him in a new part.
Yeah.
American Horror Story has proven they will accept that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is going to be the thing. Don't try to push these shows past where their premise logically says they should end.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that is a lesson for the people of television, I guess, to learn from us. Next up. So the Oscars announced something weird and controversial.
What? No host? Did you hear?
Well, no. They announced that ages ago. I don't know if you heard about this. They've decided to, in order to be sure they keep it under 3 hours, some of the awards are going to be given out during commercial breaks in the first hour.
Don't do that.
Then edited into a montage to show within the third hour.
No, bad idea.
No, it's a terrible idea. I agree. If you want to do that, just move some more stuff to the technical awards. But the idea that they're doing stuff during the commercials and then not do it and then showing a bit of them later, I mean, I'm sorry, like, do we really need the short film awards in the main ceremony? I don't know that we do. No one has seen the short films.
No, that's not true. You just haven't seen them.
No, most people have not seen the short films.
The issue is that the whole show in and of itself is so bloated and overwrought that they just can't rein themselves in to produce a show that's 3 hours long, because you have to have your tributes and your musical performances and you're this and you're that.
Little sketches and
No, you don't need any of that shit.
Just do awards, people. It's not complicated.
Yeah. Exactly.
See, what you do is you announce who the nominees for an award are, you give out the award, and then you do that 50 more times and you can go home. There.
Oh, and here's an idea. Maybe you don't have 10 Best Picture nominees.
That would be a very good idea.
That'll cut some time out of your your show.
Yeah, I think that would. So yeah, and Alfonso Cuarón was especially annoyed because they wanted to, and this is the one that everyone thought was crazy, they wanted to move cinematography to the commercial.
Why would you do that?
I know, and it's like the second most important technical thing after director? Why would you move that?
Yeah.
Although he did, and I think they might be moving editing as well. And I'm like, no.
Don't do that.
Yeah. He did a whole speech about how, you know, you can have movies without actors, without color, without sound, but you can't have them without cinematography or editing. And I'm like, well, Alfonso, you're wrong. You can have a movie without editing. There's bunches of movies that don't have editing.
We've seen plenty of them.
We have plenty of them. But beyond just, in a joking way, there are actually a number of one take films out there that are perfectly good, that are made without editing. Because that's the whole point of one-take films. But he is right that you can't do it without cinematography, and it's crazy to not celebrate cinematography on the main show. Like, that's ridiculous.
Well, what the fuck do you think a movie is?
Yeah, exactly. Like, moving images. There you go.
Jesus Christ.
I know, it's bad. It's really bad. All right, so I believe you have a list for us.
I do. Okay. Ooh. Today's list is the 13 most powerful cursed objects in horror movies.
Most powerful. Oof. That's going to be a tough one. Does Chucky the doll count as an object?
Well, no. Here, I'll read to you.
Oh, the criteria. Yes.
The criteria. Okay. They were ranked based on three criteria. Power to kill, potential for widespread influence, and general creep factor. They picked only the most homicidal objects and excluded anything that appeared even slightly animate. So.
Okay, so no Zuni fetish, no Chucky.
No Chucky.
Okay, there you go. Okay. All right, let's do this.
Are you ready? Counting down from 13.
The painting from Ghostbusters. Oh, Ghostbusters 2. No, you know what? The face kind of moves, so there you go.
Well, no, because the painting doesn't move around.
No, but he's like, his lip curls and stuff, and then he steps out of the painting. He does step out of the painting, so, you know.
I actually don't remember that.
He does. It's right at the end. The actual actor is there.
Oh, anyway. Okay, so, number 13, everything in the basement from Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, see, that's super cheating, but it's very funny, and I'm glad they started the list that way.
It is very, lots of cheating. I don't know, like, it gave power 10, sure. Widespread influence 2. I would say, like, a 0.
Yeah, it literally can't have widespread influence. It can only attack the 5 people in the cabin.
Yeah, and that's it. Like, it's a controlled experiment. Yeah. It just,
No, it's got no widespread influence, but it is incredibly powerful.
I don't know if any of that shit was really all that creepy.
Not particularly, no.
No.
All right. But very powerful. I'll give them that one.
Oh, yeah. Number 12, the laundry press from The Mangler.
Yay! I'm so glad that was remembered. Way to go! Yeah, it's a crazy movie, The Mangler. It stars Ted Levine.
It does.
Yeah, Ted Levine in it. I know, it's a hilarious movie. If you haven't seen The Mangler, you should see The Mangler. It's great.
So ridiculous.
It was this amazing 90s period where literally they would option any Stephen King story, whether or not you could reasonably make it into a movie, and oftentimes they couldn't, hence Lawnmower Man. But it is based on a story more than Lawnmower Man is, because that was about a cursed it definitely was about a cursed laundry press. Yes. But oh my God, was it nowhere near as silly as that movie was? Oh, okay. Next up.
All right, number 11, the 1958 Plymouth Fury from Christine.
Oh, there you go. See, not anime. Oh, it drives on its own.
Yeah, so maybe that does count.
It is literally animate. Like, it does drive on its own. Arnie isn't always in the car. It goes out and kills people on its own. So, true. DQ'd. Let's keep going.
Okay. It's only rated a 6 for widespread influence.
What?
The car.
Oh, okay. That's
it's
weird.
Driving on its own. I feel like it's widespread influence.
Yeah, like unlimited, really. It can go anywhere. Yeah. Oh, wait. Can't fill itself up with gasoline.
Well, I think it can still... I mean, I guess the overall gas guzzlers back then, but...
Yeah. I think maybe that thing only gets 80 miles before its threat wraps up.
All right, number 10, the video game Brain Scan.
Oh, okay. It's not cursed. Like, there's nothing supernatural about it. The video game is just, it's a hypnotic thing that makes you have a video game adventure.
That's right. Yeah, you're right.
It's not cursed. Well, or supernatural in any way, shape, or form.
When you're playing the game, maybe it feels like it is. Because you only find out at the end of the movie. Now I'm about to ruin Brain Scan for everybody.
Oh, no. Not that 40-year-old movie. I know it's only 28 years old, but still.
At the end of the movie, you find out the entire movie was the video game. Yeah. But I guess the trickster character, he's supposed to be some kind of, like, supernatural...
No, he's supposed to be, like, within the world of the game.
So I think that's what it is.
Yeah, but I don't know that that counts.
I don't think it counts either. I'm glad it made a list. Quite frankly.
No, it's a really fun movie that everybody should check out. And no one did when it first came out. And it has not had the kind of critical reassessment that Prince of Darkness has had. And it's not on Prince of Darkness's level, but it's a really fun movie that it's worth checking out. Brain Scan.
Yeah. Even though I just ruined it for y'all. Sorry.
Sorry.
Number 9, the Pazuzu Amulet from The Exorcist.
Okay, there you go. Not animate at all, and it is very powerful.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah, way to go. All right, good entry, guys.
Ugh, I disagree with this. Number 8, the television from Poltergeist.
No, television is used by the ghost to communicate with a little girl. It's not cursed at all. I mean, there's that, I'm thinking about the remake where they got that joke where they, oh no. Wait, was it in the original or the remake where they have the joke where they throw away the TV? The remake. Sam Rockwell. Anyway, Sam Rockwell, right?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember any details about the remake. It completely left my head right afterwards. Like, seriously, who cares?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the TV wasn't possessed. It wasn't cursed. The TV had nothing to do with it. It was just using the EMF wavelength to communicate, and the TV was tuning into those wavelengths. Like, the TV wasn't the problem.
Yeah.
All right. So, and it's a poltergeist. Like, even the evil clown isn't a cursed object. It's just something the poltergeist is moving. This is a sloppy list.
It is, right? Okay, all number right. 7, the button from Drag Me to Hell.
Oh, see, there you go. She did put a curse on an object, and it follows her. Yeah, okay, there you go. That is a cursed object.
Makes sense. Okay, number 6.
I can't
6.
Imagine. I just want to say that does not have widespread impact because it's literally just one button and a curse that works on one person.
Well, they gave it a 9.
What? What do they mean by widespread influence?
I thought that would mean that this object has the potential to do a lot of damage to a lot of people.
Yeah, but it clearly doesn't. It only affects her.
Exactly.
It was specifically designed as a curse that is only for her. And that curse... anorexia.
So, these people don't know what they're doing with their own list.
Yeah. Well, I think they should have explained the terms better at the start. That would have helped.
Number 6, the mirror from Oculus.
Okay, there you go. Not animate at all. Yeah. And very cursed.
Yes.
And pretty darn powerful as well. Yeah. If you're stupid enough to get in the same room with it. Don't get in the same room with that mirror, people. There's no good can come of that. In fact, that was my biggest problem with the movie. I'm like, you're 100% sure this is a murder mirror that's going to try to murder you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know so it can warp reality.
Yourself in a room with it. That's a great idea.
What is your plan? Like, how are you going to prove
this
it?
This huge pendulum.
You can't just put the mirror on an angle and let it fall on the floor? You know? Right. Isn't that better? It'll be just as broken. Or,
how about just alone?
I have a crazy idea. Just break the mirror.
Maybe you can't.
Maybe you can't. They sure as hell didn't try. So true. I don't know if they can or not.
And they should have tried, found out they couldn't, and then.
And then, you know, got into this stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's like, oh, it's a thing with, that has eldritch horror powers and you can't do anything about it. Okay. So I guess I'll lock myself in a house with it where it murdered my parents when I was a kid.
Great idea.
Don't you get it? I'll prove that it has eldritch horror powers. How though?
Prove it to who?
Who are you going to prove it to? What do you want to accomplish by proving it?
Yes, like,
I love that it's like, you're going to, it'll make my brother feel better because he won't feel guilty about having to shoot our dad because our dad went nuts because of the mirror. And I'm like, yeah, he's still going to feel guilty. You know?
Yeah.
You he's not going to ever not feel guilty. You your dad went nuts.
You've only created more.
I know. It's like, yeah, your dad went nuts and he murdered your mom and he beat you up and he was going to kill you and your brother killed him. Like, it sucks, but that happened. And whether your dad was schizophrenic or whether a mirror made him do it, that's not going to solve, proving that isn't going to solve any problems. It still happened. But anyway, I guess it's really a story about people who went through a tragedy going to extreme lengths to take control of their lives and falling into a self-destructive loop, meaning it was about drug abuse.
God.
I guess that movie was secretly about drug abuse now that I say it out loud.
Number five.
Next up. Sorry.
Annabelle from The Conjuring.
That doll moves around.
Does she?
Yeah, she moves around.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, not like Chucky, but she does, like, appear places.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that is enough of a sign that it's animate. But it's also a garbage movie, so let's move on.
Number four, the videotape from The Ring.
See, that's a cursed object.
Yes.
And it's not 100%. Animated at all. It is the window that an evil ghost uses to get into the world, but the object itself is not animate. It is 100% a cursed object, and it has the biggest possible reach. In fact, there's a movie about that called Rings.
Well, it only got a 5 for widespread influence.
Okay, you know what? Whatever they think they mean by widespread influence, they need to stop. Like, yeah. They just need to stop putting that entry on there. Because that is gibberish. Anyone can make a tape of it and anyone can watch it.
Right?
All over the world. You don't have to speak the language it's in. You don't have to do anything. Everyone can be the victim of that to an unlimited extent.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. They don't know what they're doing with this list. Nope. All right, go.
Number 3, the lament configuration.
Aw, see, there you go. I'm weirded out that that wasn't number one, and I'm really curious to see what number one is, since the lament configuration isn't, because it's like, if not the only definitive cursed object, it's really high on the list.
Well, when we get to number one, you might-
I'll see why? Okay.
Yeah, okay. But number 2, oh god. The internet.
What?
From Unfriended.
Oh, screw you.
Internet,
was
like,
a ghost.
Right here, like, right- At the start of the post, it says, so the internet doesn't really technically count as an object.
Nor is the internet cursed in the movie. It's a ghost.
It's a ghost.
Communicating with them through the internet.
Yeah.
Did you watch the movie? Jesus.
Yeah. So stupid.
Yeah, no, that's a really bad entry. On a pretty bad list. It's weird to have a notable.
And here, 10. But no, this is the ghost
of a specific girl who only cares about getting revenge on specific people. So there you go.
Ugh.
All
right.
Number one. I really am.
The Necronomicon.
Oh, of course. What am I saying? Of course the Necronomicon's number one. Yeah, no, that obviously deserves to be number one.
But Necronomicon should be number 2.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Just the idea that Unfriended beat the lament configuration from Hellraiser is crazy bonkers.
Stupid.
Yeah, all right, that's deeply dumb. All right, there you go. So yeah, that was a very troublesome list, although it is one of the more interesting premises we've seen in a while, so way to go. And it leads us nicely into our video, the videos we're going to talk about this week, which are both about cursed objects.
That's where they call them videos.
Yeah, I know. I shouldn't have called them videos. They both feel very direct to video is why I said that, but you know, it still was very unclear. Yeah. And I probably should have just said movies because it doesn't matter how they originally premiered. A movie is a movie is a movie. All right. First up is, I forgot to ask you if there's a new horror movie coming.
You're so bad at this.
I'm so bad at this. I apologize.
Yeah. Well, on the topic of, I guess, possessed or demonic stuff, I don't know.
Okay.
This week's upcoming horror movie is called Amy. It took me a while to figure out how to pronounce this.
Okay.
Because it's spelled A-M-I. So I'm like, is it Amy? Is it just A-M-I? But it's Amy.
Okay.
Cassie has become a recluse ever since her mother died in a car accident.
Her mother, Amy.
What?
I was saying, her mother, Amy? No?
No. Don't editorialize.
Okay.
In an effort to fill the void, she downloads Amy, the latest intelligent personal assistant.
Okay.
As her relationship quickly deepens into a twisted codependency, Cassie falls deeper and deeper under Amy's spell, not realizing that everyone she knows is in serious danger.
Oh, so it's like a single white female meets her. Got it.
I just like wanted to shut that off.
You wanted to shut that off? Her?
No, but like if I never saw her, but like if your digital assistant is trying to kill the people around you.
Well, I don't think she'll know that right away.
But once you get to the point where you're like, oh, my technology is controlling my life. Okay, we'll just turn it off.
Yeah, but she lives in the near future, so like it's a Black Mirror situation where Amy lives in the cloud and it's linked into everything in the world, so it can like control streetlights and cause traffic accidents and whatnot, so she can't actually turn it off.
Not how that stuff works.
Well, no, but they're saying in a Black Mirror kind of way that is how the future
works. No, you're assuming that that's what's going on.
Oh, I'm guaranteeing. No, but I'm guaranteeing that's what the movie's going to be about. Like, that's my prediction right now, and I would be very surprised if that wasn't true. Yeah, I don't think it's literally just going to be like a talking thing on her phone is stabbing people, and at any point she could just turn off her phone.
Also, why does this girl need an intelligent personal assistant if she's a recluse?
That is the bigger issue, I would say. Oh God, I gotta get my life together. I'm supposed to be wallowing in self-pity today. I keep forgetting to spend the day wallowing in self-pity. I need an organizer to help me deal with this.
That's such a busy schedule, staying inside all day long, not talking
Although,
to people.
It's possible that it like wants, it's one of those things where like someone's like, here, try Amy. It'll help you, you know, get out and experience the world again and blah, 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 blah. And of course, what really happens, it becomes obsessed with her and tries to kill all of her friends.
I know. I just feel like we're headed in the wrong direction here, because if she's a recluse and she wants to fill the void, well, you have the internet. You don't need your home, but you can still make friends on the internet. You don't need a fucking talking cell phone.
Is this a real movie or is this a direct-to-video situation?
It is awaiting release. That's all I can tell you.
Okay. Anybody famous involved with it?
Not famous to me, no.
Okay. I will take that as read then.
The writers are quoted saying, with AI becoming synonymous with our daily lives, not yet.
Not at all.
No one knows us better than our devices. Not true. We were inspired to create a story of the ramifications surrounding our vulnerability to technology.
Oh, come on.
I don't know.
All right. Yeah. You're not encouraging me, writers.
Yeah.
Although. Sorry. Every time I hear a writer talk about their inspirations now, I always go back to my favorite writer discussing his inspiration ever, Scott Derrickson, talking about how I was watching The Ring, and then I had a nightmare about The Ring, and I decided to make it into a movie. And that movie is called Sinister.
What more do you need?
Just like...
That's great. I love it.
I love that his... No, I just love that his, like, inspiration is, well, I wanted to rip off The Ring, because it was really scary. Sold! Way to go, Scott Derrickson. You pulled it off.
What's wrong with that? I don't know why you're...
No, it's great. It's just, it's so weird to see someone, like, tell the story without realizing that's the story they're telling.
I don't know if he doesn't realize it.
It really does sound like, when I read the interview, it sounded like he didn't understand that he was just like, I wanted to rip off the ring, is what he was saying. And if he had said it that way, I would have had so much more respect for him. Well, the ring is scary, so I thought, let's do that again.
No, because he had the dream.
I know he had the dream, which was
influenced by the ring. Watched a scary movie, had a scary dream, made that into a scary movie. Like,
oh no, it's perfect. It is perfect, you're right. That's exactly how you want this to go. No, that is how inspiration should work. You're completely right. Okay, now we will talk about our movies. About cursed objects. One of which is only kind of about cursed objects, but still.
Well, they both have cursed objects in them.
And neither is about the cursed objects.
So, anyway.
Let's go.
Our first movie tonight is Avalanche Sharks. A controlled blast for an avalanche sets off a group of supernatural sharks that swim in the snow and eat everyone in sight.
Yeah, it is about ghost sharks, in case you're wondering. Is this going to be about ghost sharks? Yeah, they're ghost sharks.
But it's not Ghost Shark, not to be confused.
With the movie Ghost Shark, obviously. Shark, but they are ghost shark, interestingly, who are made out of ice.
I guess so.
Yeah, we get close-ups on the sharks a few times, and they're pretty clearly, like, the intent is that they're supposed to be made out of ice.
Although they kind of look more like stone.
They look more like ice to me, but, I mean, it could be just the color settings on our television, or various televisions.
Something or other.
Yeah, whereas to me, they looked clearly like they were ice. But, again, that's something where we could check with the director or the people who did the special effects.
It does not matter.
It's not relevant to the story at all. Speaking of not relevant to the story at all, the story.
So, this was very puzzling.
Okay.
So, there's, like, the lizard guy who likes to tell stories, I guess, makes up stories, what have you. Yeah. And he makes up a story about sharks that swim in the snow.
Yes.
From outer space or something along those lines. Then he tells a story later on about the sharks being spirits of the mountain.
Yes.
And that actually is what's going
the on. Truth.
Like, did you just happen to make up a story?
In an amazing coincidence, he made up a story that was 100% true. Because there are other characters who know this story, but it's not them telling it.
It's him.
It's him. And I'm like, did he hear the story somewhere? Did I miss a scene where someone told him the story?
Because when he first tells the story, the sharks are from outer space.
Yeah.
And then he tells it the second time, it's like he's telling the legend of the mountain. It's like,
yes.
I don't understand what's going on.
No, that was really baffling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did not understand that at all.
So do you not know the story? The true story of the avalanche sharks? Like, you gotta give
it
me
is
something
weird.
Here because...
Yeah, but that's the least of this film's problems. This film is literally just, it's one of those things that we often talk about where it's not so much a story as a series of things that happen that have only the most tertiary relationship to each other. Like, an avalanche knocks over some totems, which when I first saw them, I thought, wait a minute, hold on. Did, they look like the rigging of a ship? Like the masts of a ship when I first saw them? I was confused about their scale for a moment. And I thought, oh, is that the rigging of a ship? Oh my god. Did somehow a ship end up at the top of a mountain and that ship has like ghost shark treasure in it for summoning ghost sharks? but no, there were just always ghost sharks on the mountain because of a native massacre. And then they were contained with inside totems. But then if you knock the totems over, they get, they get back out and they go on a killing spree.
See, when the totems fell over at the start of the movie, I didn't actually notice any, like...
No, they don't look any different. Yeah, no.
Nothing actually happened. There was, like, some sort of blue glowy stuff. I'm like, okay, so what? And then later on in the movie where this random girl randomly shows up and randomly sets the totems back up.
That's right. A character we've essentially spent no time with who's not a part of the film, mm-hmm. resolves all of the film's conflicts without knowing what's going on. It would be like if, you know, someone just, during the plot of Tron, someone, a cleaner came in and unplugged the master control program. That is how this story is resolved.
It's just, like, I honestly don't understand what's going on in this movie. I don't think the movie understands what's going on.
Well, what happened was, they had a visual effect where someone got a shark biting into their leg, and then another shark came in and chomped them, and they wanted to build a whole movie around that, and so they show you that exact same effect three times.
But of all the sci-fi movies I've seen, and I've seen quite a few, this is by far the laziest.
Oh no, they don't care at all.
Like, they don't give a shit. They have this... zero fucks to give. They ran out of fucks a long time ago, never went back to the well, and now they're just churning out crap. Like, anyone can just slap some ideas together on a piece of paper and mail it into sci-fi, and it'll get produced the next week. Like,
they don't care. I mean, it is literally, I mean, the takeaway I had watching the movie was exactly your takeaway, in that no one working on this movie cared at all.
Yeah.
Like, nobody just gave a damn. Like, from scene to scene, moment to moment, no one cared in the least. None of the actors, the director certainly didn't. The people doing the effects were putting in a quarter-assed effort at best. Like, there was just no care at all to making any of this quality. Like, they're just like, look, sci-fi needs 52 of these a year. They gave us $850,000. Let's just go do it. And so, that is honestly how it feels.
Because there's this scene where, like, an action... So I'm watching it, I'm like, so there are no avalanches. This is called avalanche sharks. And then an avalanche happens. I'm like, oh, okay. And this... A building gets buried in the avalanche, and they see the people inside the building. One of them's looking out the window. But you're buried under snow. You can't see anything out the window.
Yeah.
It's
a god-awful movie.
It's so bad.
There's a scene where there's a shark in a hot tub, sure, but that's basically all it has.
Yeah. That's about it. There's a guy with a snowblower blowing snow on the side of the mountain for no reason.
I'm like, what are you doing?
Why are you there?
Then he gets eaten by a shark.
Yeah.
Like, what? There hasn't been any snowfall. Like, and even if there was, do you need to snowblow a mountain? Don't people just drive on the snow?
Because he's not even clearing it. It's not like he's clearing a pathway.
No, he's just at the bottom of a hill running a snowblower. Honestly.
Like, okay, I know you're there, A, to scare the sheriff so that he fires his gun for no reason, and then B, to get eaten by a shark so that you can have a delightful little moment where the snowblower blows the bloody snow. But that doesn't work because you stand behind the snowblower.
Yeah. And the thing is, I thought, wouldn't it have been funny had the shark... had the shark bitten him and his head went flying off in front of the snowblower, and then it kept rolling forward and then bloody snow. Poof, a second later. That would have been funny. Gruesome, but funny.
But the physics don't even work out for the gag.
No, for the gag, because that doesn't happen. Literally, the snowblower's in front of him, he gets whomped under the water, and then suddenly there's red snow. I'm like, but where'd the red snow come from?
You're standing behind,
and what?
So, yeah, so, like, even for that hilarious gag, it doesn't even make sense.
No, there's no internal logic, even with their stupid gore pranks.
Yeah.
Ugh. So, there are technically characters in this movie.
Who appears at the start of the film, and you never see her again.
Yep, that's true.
People just sort of appear and disappear at random.
There is a lady who's married to the sheriff who, when she was a child, her family were killed by snow sharks.
Yeah.
And she has said she has spent her whole life staying on the mountain hoping to prove the snow sharks were real, but has not looked into it at all.
No. She's also like, a marine biologist. That doesn't help.
Well, more to the point, I was like, wait, did you know they were snow sharks? Because it seems like if you'd known they were snow sharks, at least you'd have a lead, but she acts like she doesn't know they're snow sharks. But you were obsessed with discovering them and you devote your whole life to it. So it's a coincidence that you became a marine biologist when they're snow sharks?
And here's a child's drawing showing a shark eating a person on the mountain. Why didn't she become an expert in local folklore?
Yes. And then the craziest part is later, they're like, oh, right, there were snow sharks in the mountain. And then we called a shaman to lock him up, and he did, and it's been fine since. Like, she didn't find that out in the past 25 years
of being obsessed
with this?
Well, she has a career as a marine biologist.
As she lives in the mountains of Colorado.
The mountains, yes.
You know, marine biologist territory.
This is filmed at Mammoth Mountain, which is a real place in California.
Oh, it's in California. Okay, so maybe she goes down to the ocean a couple of times a year. I don't know. But it's like, it's just so bizarre that we're expected to believe she has spent her whole life obsessed with finding out what killed her parents. But then when we start finding out things, like, she's like, I have no idea what's going on. Shouldn't you though? Haven't you spent your entire life leading up to this moment?
Right?
Oh God. Yeah. That character made zero sense, especially since her background with the snow sharks from when she was a kid and her knowledge of sharks has no bearing on the plot.
Yep. Like,
nothing happens. We got a woman who's supposedly obsessed with them since she was a kid, and she's a shark expert. None of that comes into play at all.
Well, we don't know if she's a shark expert.
Well, no, she's a marine biologist, so I think we're just supposed to assume she knows a lot about sharks.
Well, I would hope so, but then when finally everyone accepts that these are sharks, she's got nothing to offer.
No, zero. Like, it doesn't play in at all.
Stand still, or the sharks will know where you are. I'm like, they don't work like that.
I don't think that's how sharks work. I'm pretty sure they smell people with their incredibly advanced underwater noses.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a terrible film. It really is, just even as you say, by their standards. Let's just say it's no Stonehenge Apocalypse.
No, it's not even in the same ballpark as Stonehenge Apocalypse.
A beautifully crazy film that everyone should see. Oh God. God, 2012 made for some pretty amazing movies. People's crazy beliefs about 2012 and Mayans and it made for some pretty crazy films, and I did love a lot of them. But yeah, this thing is just, it's trash. It really is, and it's not even fun trash. You know, the effects aren't good enough, and the situations aren't crazy enough for it to be fun trash. And again, no one behaves in any sense logically. A guy won't tell his girlfriend he loves her, because he's afraid of commitment. Then she gets eaten by a snow shark. And then he goes back out with them to try to find the snow sharks.
And no, that's not what happens. The girl, so she gets eaten by a snow shark. He runs away and he's like, I killed her. I wouldn't tell her that I loved her. And now she's dead. And love is the answer. Love is the key. He's running away from the sharks when he runs into the other two people who are out looking for. So stupid. So these two guys go missing at the start of the movie.
Yes.
And so there's this character who spends the entire movie looking for his like missing cousin or whoever he is.
Yeah.
And so Ski Patrol refuses to go
and check
looking for these people who have disappeared in the backcountry.
I just love that the Ski Patrol won't do that. That's their job.
It is their literal job.
That's their only job. And this is a really popular touristy mountain. So you don't want word getting around that people are just disappearing and never being seen again on your super important touristy mountain.
Well, Ski Patrol's excuse is that, well, they were out of bounds. And you ski at your own risk out of bounds. Not how it works, but anyway. I mean, you do ski at your own risk out of bounds, but if
someone goes still look out of bounds, for you.
Rescue still has to go and find you. That's how,
That's
how it works. Anyway. So he's like, well, I guess I'll have to go find him myself. So he's just randomly wandering around in the woods, yelling his name.
And then he runs into this guy.
To the guy whose girlfriend got eaten by a shark, and then he gets eaten by a shark. So
yeah,
that's the end of that.
And then, but rather crazily, Then they go and they talk to the cops and it's like snow sharks. And then, like they refuse to, everyone acts like it could have been something else. And I didn't know what I saw. And I'm like, you all saw fins and then you saw sharks burst out of the snow and eat people. I mean, like you saw that.
Hard to wrap your head around. Like, I can understand why you wouldn't believe your own eyes in that case.
A little.
But then when it happens again,
I know.
And then a third time, and then five more times after that.
At a certain point, you just have to be, yep, everything I know about the universe is wrong. Snow sharks are real. This is the new reality. Let's start working on based on that.
Ghost snow sharks. Let's be
ghost
clear.
Ghost snow sharks. You're right. They are ghost snow sharks. They're snow sharks with all the powers of a ghost.
Oh my god.
So yeah, god awful movie. Let's move on.
Yeah, and then it ends in the dumbest way. A random character randomly goes
puts up the totems.
And she randomly writes them, and now all of our problems are solved until one of them falls over randomly.
For no reason. Just for no reason.
God, it would have been helpful to know that, like, cause again, this one guy seems to know the story, the folklore of the ghost sharks, but he doesn't tell anyone that matters.
Nope.
And because of the story that he made up, we don't know if that's really the case.
Well, it kind of is because the, what do you call it? I mean, it is confirmed by the crazy Ralph character that a shaman showed up and put up some totem poles to contain
it.
No,
this isn't a crazy Ralph. He's crazy.
No, no, but I'm just saying, the film does tell us that that guy was randomly correct.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know if the details about the native massacre that he gives us are 100% accurate, but the fact that there was, you know, a cursed ghost shark, yeah, that's all true.
Yeah, but no, but the point I'm driving at is that at no point in the film does the guy with the made-up story and the people who are actually suffering from ghost shark attacks, their paths never
run into each other. Yeah.
So there's never a chance for the victims to try to rectify the situation. It just
also
happens randomly.
More importantly, since Crazy Ralph knows what's going on and knows how it was resolved last time, when people start disappearing, why isn't his first call to a shaman? Why does he, like, just start driving around with a machine gun?
Maybe the shamans are hard to come by in this day and age.
But you should at least try, you know?
Why bother when you have a machine gun? That doesn't do anything.
People keep trying to shoot ghost ice sharks.
Something.
Why do you think that will work?
Like, unload your magazine. Nothing works. Why would you then keep doing that?
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you.
You've proven to yourself and everyone else that it has no effect. Don't waste time shooting the ghost sharks.
Okay, let's move on to our second movie of the evening.
All right, our second movie tonight is Satan's Blade. A group of people staying in some cabins are eventually killed by a man with a knife. So this was pitched as, what was it? People at a ski resort are murdered by a man with a haunted knife. It's like, oh, that sounds awesome.
It's not awesome.
Not awesome, and that's not what happened. Like, they are murdered by a man with a knife, but...
Well, it is, I mean, it is... Okay, that is a technically accurate description of the plot.
But you don't find that out till the end of the movie.
Till the literally the last seconds of the movie.
Yes.
Because I was gonna, until I get to the last seconds of the movie, my response to you was going to be, so when did you figure out what was going on? Immediately or sooner?
And my answer would be, at the end of the movie, because that's when it explains what the fuck is going on.
As the movie starts, right? As the movie starts, a sexualized violence bank robbery happens.
Yeah.
An unpleasantly sexualized violence bank robbery happens.
It was like something, it was like football bank.
Yeah. Ridiculous, but yes. But anyway, so that happens, and then the two bank robbers, right, retire to one of the cabins, and one of the bank robbers is like, haha, I'm gonna murder you, my partner. And later, when George, the guy whose plan this all was, shows up. Right? I'm gonna murder him too. Ha ha. And then as she's saying that, she gets stabbed in the back. It's actually kind of funny how it's timed. But literally as she's like, ha ha, I'm great at murder, stabbed in the back.
She forgot the most important part of all of that. First, yeah. She gets undressed.
Yes, she does get undressed first. You're absolutely right.
Her murdering boots so that she can put her partner and then get murdered.
Okay, but anyway, so then we cut to the next day and the cabin's happening. And so my first thought is, okay, here's what this movie is about. One of the cops, I didn't know which one to start with. One of the cops is the other bank robber and he murdered the two of them. But then like someone heard the screams and called the cops. So he didn't have time to search and find the money. And now they've opened up they've opened up the room again to rent. So now he's got to make it look like there's a crazy murderer running around and kill the people so he can get the money. That is what I thought was going on right from the start of the movie. And spoiler alert, yes.
Why would you think that?
Just because I've seen a movie before and they specifically talk about another partner. And I'm like, that's going to pay off later. And then the crazy part is that is what's happening.
But there's nothing in the movie to suggest that that's what's going on.
Well, no, I mean, there is. That is the plot of the film. It's just there's also a magic knife.
No, but what I'm saying, yes, that's the plot of the film, but there's nothing that happens in the movie to lead you down that road to make that conclusion that one of the cops is the third partner in this bank robbery.
Except for
he's now running around killing everybody because he needs to get to the money that's hidden in that cabin. Because, and the cops said that they could rent that cabin. It's like,
I know, and that's why I was so puzzled.
Like, first of all, it's an active fucking crime scene.
Why are you letting them rent the cabin?
Like, what the fuck are you doing renting that cabin? People died there 5 hours ago.
I know. You've literally only just bleached the blood off of the walls and scrubbed it out of the floor.
Yeah.
Just now. Why are you renting this cabin?
Yes.
Yeah. No, that makes no sense at all. And you're right that it did seem like my theory was crazy, but then the theory turned out to be accurate. It's just the film.
But again, that there's
nothing in the film to support my theory, even though it was right.
Exactly.
Because no one behaves like they would if that's what was going on.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's why the film is so bizarre. And we can't stress enough how tedious this film is.
Oh my god.
It has two murders right at the start, and it is an 80-minute movie.
And then just the people show up, and then they rent the cabins, and then they hang up.
Nothing happens.
Someone goes fishing, and then this couple has a fight, and then they make up, and then some people go to dinner, and someone has a dream about people getting murdered, but it's just a dream, there's nothing to worry about.
But
and
then they all do get murdered.
It's left in the movie, and everybody gets murdered.
Right away.
All at once, there's an extended scene of two people running through the woods. They get murdered.
Like, how did he get in front of them?
How does he even know where they are?
Yeah, like, I don't understand what happened there, actually. Because wasn't he focused on murdering the people back at the cabin to get his money?
You'd think so, but then he went after these two idiots in the woods.
Oh, God, this movie's terrible.
It's so hard to watch.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
yeah.
We cannot stress how slow this movie is.
It takes forever for nothing to happen. Because yeah. I messaged you. I'm like, have you seen it yet? You're like, no. I'm like, it is so boring.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, you just don't get into this thing at all. And it kind of hurts that, like, all of the, there are too many characters and none of them have anything to do. Cause renting the cabin next door, so there's the two couples who are renting the one cabin, and next door are five friends.
Yes.
And I can't tell you one thing about any of them except one of them hits on the married guy.
One of them's blonde.
Okay. I did not count hair color as a thing to be worth talking about. But I mean, when there's nothing else to grab onto, I'll give you that one.
But you can't say anything about them. I'm like, well, that's something about them.
One of them does have a different hair color than the other four? Why are there four characters?
So, Okay, so, when everybody shows up to rent the cabins, they hear about the murder. It just happened. How could you have heard about it?
Yep.
And then
I guess it's possible that it was on like the car radio as they were driving up.
He said he read about it.
Oh yeah, I guess he did. I was
reading his paper. I'm like, oh, you didn't.
It happened that morning.
It's not possible.
All right.
It's the middle of friggin' nowhere. Okay, so when they're renting the cabins, they're told a story about like some wild man who lived on the mountain. And then as people started moving to the mountain, they were sort of encroaching upon his territory and he didn't like that. And he kept, retreating further and further up the mountain until there was nowhere else to go. And then he went crazy and killed people and jumped into the lake and died.
Yep.
And now he lives in the bottom of the lake, like
Jason. He's become the gentleman of the lake. He throws a sword out, and whoever picks up the sword gets possessed by his spirit to go murder horny campers.
And that's exactly what I thought at the end of the movie. I'm like, oh, some watery tart threw a sword.
I know. And that is, I mean, it's not like they're subtle with the imagery. They specifically make it look as much like a Camelot type of situation as possible.
Tosses a knife out of the water and it lodges itself in a tree.
Yeah.
And then when you pull the knife from the tree, you become possessed by his spirit and all you want to do is murder.
And which is weird because the cop was already a murderous bank robber and then he coincidentally, unrelated to that, found a knife in a tree.
Well, no, the cop wasn't in on the bank robbery. He just told them how
he was in
the bank. He wasn't there. There were only two people at the bank
robbery. No, but he was in on the bank robbery. He knew the plan was to go rob a bank and kill a bunch of people.
I don't know if he knew the plan was to kill a bunch of people.
It would be weird if he did.
Rob the bank.
Okay. Yeah, they do have no reason to kill those people.
No, absolutely. Everybody's very cooperative.
Yeah, they're actually like doing completely professional bank robbery stuff. So you're totally right. But anyway, there's like, he was already a criminal and then he finds a murder knife wholly unrelated to the criminality he was already a part of.
In the story of the Gentleman of the Lake.
Yeah.
Do they mention that he has a knife? I don't think.
Yeah. No. Cause he asked God for the power to get rid of all the people of the mountain. But instead the devil answered his prayer with a magic knife.
Oh, okay. I guess I forgot about that part.
Yeah. It is, I mean, the title is not inaccurate. It is Satan's dagger.
Okay.
Yeah, so that part of the title is true. It's just, it's not satisfying.
No, not at all.
It's not like Satan shows up to get his dagger back or something.
And again, like this movie's the same problem with the avalanche sharks, in that there's no, like even if they know the story.
It's not relevant to the proceedings.
It doesn't have any impact on the decisions that they make to try to save themselves.
Although they don't really make any good decisions to try to save themselves.
No, they don't. It's kind of, well, once again, cause it only happens in the last 10 minutes of the movie. And then it's like, okay, well, we can't drive away because our tires have been slashed. All right, so I'll stay together in this one cabin. It's like, no, we have to leave. It's like, no, you really don't have to.
Why? Like, why do you have to leave? You're expecting to run down a mountain in the pitch black on a snowy night.
Yeah.
Just hide in a room. It's fine.
You're going to be fine.
Yeah. There's nothing he can do unless you all split up.
So, like, there's no resolution to this. Just the cop, I guess, finishes killing everybody.
Yeah.
Gets his money. And then, like, how do you know that they're, like, and then he drops the knife. It's like, well, has the knife done its business? How does the knife?
I think the idea is because there's no more people on the mountain at the moment.
Doesn't make any sense though, because they're supposed to be at a ski resort. There will always be people on the mountain.
That's true. It's possible that he only, well, no, actually, you know what? Within the story that they're told, it does make it sound like he only wants to protect a very specific part of the mountain.
Seems so just it's possible that it's only,
it's only those two cabins where he wants to kill people. it is possible that that's it.
Why?
And so when he's, maybe that's where his original shack was.
Ugh, it doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. I'm trying to offer a suggestion because, to be fair, within the world of the film, when the cop has succeeded in killing everybody at those two cabins, he is freed of the knife's curse and able to throw it back in the water.
Mm-hmm.
So, they do at least suggest that the knife had a specific task in mind, and then once you've achieved that task, you can go on your way.
But then, the knife is immediately tossed
thrown
back
right
out
back
of the water,
it. Yeah.
So clearly its job isn't finished.
Well, I think it's just reset until next time people get in that cabin.
But then, why wouldn't the gentleman of the lake throw the knife when someone else has moved into the cabin? There's nobody in that cabin.
To be fair, we don't know how long it is after the end of the movie that the knife gets thrown back out. All we do is we do see, like, it's all over, then we see the lake, and then the knife gets thrown into a wall and the guy picks it up. But we don't know when that is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Within the way the film is made, it seems like it's all the same day. I'm not going to deny that that's how it seems, but to be fair, we don't know that for sure.
Oh, this movie's so terrible.
It's a god-awful movie.
Oh, it's so boring.
You can't defend it. You can't explain it. It's just mind-bogglingly slow.
And it has such a fun-sounding premise.
It really does. Like, what if there's a crazy knife, and then whenever someone picks up the crazy knife, they go murder mad? Like, that's a cool idea. You know, but that is not the movie we get. No, it's like a murder mystery. Kind of, you know, but it also does not have a satisfying resolution. And the weird part is, like, if you hadn't had the like, you actually could have done this without the magic knife, where you could have just done my plot where the cop shows up, right, and he wants to search the thing, and you could have had the lazy local sheriff, like, being like, all right, well, you know, you don't see any evidence. And then the deputy's like, shouldn't we lock it up and, like, wait for the state police to get here on Monday to search it for trace evidence? He's like, ugh. And then, like, because he's local and he's corrupt, the guy who, you know, runs the resort is like, or I could give you $50 and you could let me rent it out for the weekend. And the sheriff would have been like, fine, just give me the $50. That's fine.
Can't be asked.
He doesn't care. He's a local cop. He doesn't care. They were two out-of-towners that were bank robbers. Who cares?
I was waiting for the twist wherein, because there was a murder like 25 years ago, and it was like the old cop's first case, and now...
Yes,
so,
and
like,
now
I was
it's happening
the
again.
The twist where it's like, oh, he killed those people 20 years ago because he was possessed with the knife.
That would have been a good twist, too. Like, there's stuff you could do with this story that would have been at least fun. And mildly interesting, and they did none of it. So yeah,
I think what we need to do is we need to rewrite, reboot Satan's Blade, and then send it to Sci-Fi.
That's not a terrible
they'll
idea.
They'll make anything.
They will make anything.
And this one will actually make sense.
And we'll call it The Devil's Knife.
The Devil's Knife, that's right.
Which is the title I kept accidentally calling
it. Yeah.
All right. So look for that in the future. The Devil's Knife, written by the AVOD. I got two other things to write first. So
how long could this possibly take?
No, you're right. It can't possibly. I mean, we're just going to make the same movie again, but you know, with the plot developments we've put in. So, you know, it'll be fine. All right. So with that in mind, let's do a narcissism watch. Do you have any narcissism you would like us to watch?
Bit of a delay getting out new episodes of True North Crime and Chicks and Dicks, but they are forthcoming, so.
Yay!
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I can't wait to find out what happens next in Canadian Murders. See, I'm acting like Canadian Murders is like a series, but. But no, it's just
we will travel to beautiful British Columbia for
nice.
Our next month.
Yeah. Well, I do like British Columbia. It's one of my favorite Columbias.
Oh, okay.
The other one being Columbia and then Columbia University. In that order.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, British Columbia, you win. For me, okay, biggest narcissism watch ever. Mm-hmm. a script I wrote got nominated for a Canada Screen Award.
Except that your name isn't on it, and you...
No. I mean, if it wins, I don't get the award, but no. I still wrote it.
Yes.
So I think that's what counts. And the fun part is, you might be asking yourself, what's a Canada Screen Award?
Wow.
And, well, the fun part is, when I found out I had been nominated, I didn't know. I did not know what a Canada Screen Award was. You see, Canada used to have these things called the Genies and the Geminis. And Genies were for film, and Geminis were for television. There were our equivalent to the Oscars and the Emmys. And someone noticed that there is not enough Canadian television and film to do a full award show about each. So, like, 8 years ago, they combined them into a single award called the Canada Screen Awards. And that's what this is. So it is a combination Oscars Emmys that covers basically everything in what I have to imagine is a very brisk show, because it is also only 3 hours long, but it's both film and television. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of excited to watch it, although I won't get to watch it from there because, again, I am not, you know, on the list as being nominated, despite having written the screenplay.
Right. Yes.
That is the nature of filmmaking, and honestly, it's an honor just to be kind of sort of nominated.
As long as the important people know that that's actually
that I actually wrote the movie. Oh, yeah.
Being nominated.
Yeah.
You wrote that, not the guy whose name is on it.
No, I'm not saying the Canada Screen Awards are lazy. I'm saying that when they nominate a movie for its script, they don't go back and read all of the drafts. They just watch the movie.
Well, there's a union issue involved in all of this, so.
Yes, but that is not relevant to the conversation. Seriously though, it's for Our House. You should check out Our House if you haven't already. You can say, hey, I listened to a podcast by the guy who wrote that. And now I like it more. I mean, I don't know. Or maybe I like the podcast less.
Maybe.
I don't know how you're going to respond to the movie.
Yeah.
Is what I'm trying to say. But the point is, I had big narcissism to watch this week, so yay me.
Yes.
All right. Yes, and of course, constant new content over at Hidden Object Guru YouTube channel. Profiling Criminal Minds is the internet's only Criminal Minds bot podcast, somehow. So check all of that stuff out for more content from me.
You can visit the AVODs blog at theavod.com. You can leave us a comment there and tell us all about your favorite haunted object. You can send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
And I encourage you to do all of those things. So until next time, I've been Count Vargelon.
I've been DM.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.